And what I wanted to do tonight was to pick up on one sentence from his talk, and that is to read to you for a little while some things where I see the life of Jesus, or either all of it or some part of the life of Jesus, as an inner event. So that the life of Jesus that we read on the pages of scriptures is as real inside me in an interior way as it, I would imagine, it was in Bethlehem. One does this by analogous thinking, where you think by analogy, and what's out there is in here, and what's in there is out there, and then is now, and here is there, and you can still tell yourself from Luke 2. It doesn't confuse you too much. It really refreshes you. And it's like a Mobius strip. It is like a figure eight, only it turns. I don't know what that means. It's probably a little poetry, except that it is a continuum, and there is here, and then is now. So I shall get into a few stories that have everything in them for me. I looked at this woman, Sister Noemi, a Catholic sister in Duluth, took this photo in the area of the Blackstone Rangers. She taught them photography, and this is in a book called Green Ghetto, which is also extinct. I like my extinct books, and I like the ones that are not yet printed a whole lot. So I'm reading from an extinct book, of which they have a few copies here. And these are $5 books marked down to $1.97, so I bought a lot of them. And you can't get them any place anymore. What I'm going to read here is something that I felt when I saw this black woman sitting in this window with her child on her lap. The child is looking out. The child has a vista. The woman is looking quite just a little differently. She has a vista too. She has a wish, and she has a will, and certainly so does the child. These are all pictures from that one community. When a certain publisher received this, they rejected it. They told me that the pictures were all too black, that I should get some white ones and some red ones. And I told them it was an all-black community, and they still didn't understand, so I said that Jesus was Jew. I said this on the phone, and that he was not Roman, and he was not, you know, he was not Italian, and he was not German, but he was Jew, and that these were black people. And they said that wouldn't do, so I called a Catholic press on the phone, and they took it by phone. And these are all black pictures, because these are all black people in an all-black community. And it's like a morality play to me, and I saw it that way. I see her here as Israel. Mother Israel, maybe, with young Israel on her lap, or my mother with me on her lap, or with Mary with Jesus on her lap, sitting somewhere where you can look out. Some sit on mountains. My mother sat in the wash house a lot in Nebraska. That's where she dreamed. And this woman, I figure, is probably up on floor 37. She is a pilgrim, reminiscing the long trek from mirage to miracle. The road is jagged, the billows towering, the hot sand burning, and the water sour. She has heard false prophets hum new tunes and dance to empty promises. She is a pilgrim and will stand hard winters with grim countenance and a sturdy heart. She is seasoned stock, that is her heritage to her child, to be seasoned stock. There is an inheritance. The child will have a homestead, and the mother of seasoned stock. Well, I borrowed from my mother when I wrote this, and I also borrowed from Jesus' mother when I wrote this. And I didn't try to keep those separate from each other. I tried to keep them together without being confused. I would like to read another one. I like this one. I like them all. I wouldn't put them in here if I didn't like them. Some people don't like what they do. I don't like everything I do, but I like a lot that I do. I even like to read it. I know people who like their houses, and they show them to me when I visit them. That's all right with me, so I show them what I write. And it's an even trade. And some of them show me their new cars, and they like them. And I think that's all right. And I show them my story. Now these are three children swinging. They're sitting on horses, and they are swinging. And when I wrote this, pictures are not an illustration. I look at the picture, and I write with my eye on the picture. I have to watch my hand, otherwise I can't read my writing later. But I get my imagination, my imaging off of the picture, and I sign it. This is a signature to the picture. Piaget talks about this kind of language development, that words always have their roots in images, and images always have their roots in reality. So that when you hear a word, you do drop, so do I, down into some kind of imagination, and that has some roots. Mine was in Nebraska, and at this point, I could just feel that swing just go, oh, when I got so high. You know what I mean? Just high enough you think you're going to go over or down. But that excitement of getting that swing, just testing it to its end, and that wind just coming through. And, if I'm with people a while, at this point, you know, I get a guitarist, and because guitarists love to put a great big steel thing on their finger that goes, it's music, it's called steel guitar or something. It just goes, that slides along, and then the people are moving and they're pushing the swing, because that's what I saw when I wrote this. This picture, unfortunately, is, you know, it's a slide. It's just one, but a slide is very fast because you can get on both ends of a slide before and after the swing. And so I wrote, the people swing. That also helps you with your rhythm, called cadence. Horses do it. And Brubeck told me about 2 years ago he learned his rhythm for his jazz on horseback, as it came through the galloping hoofs of the horse and up through its skin and its muscles and through his bottom. He learned it from bottom up. The people swinging is an elective in the ghetto, and all enroll to swing. Feet first they fly, and wind whips across the face and hair. They're off the ground in a sacrament of wee, wee is a liturgical cry. Swinging. Strong elements of a long list of invisible gifts from the sacrament of joy. A threefold amen for fun. Swing it to the rhythm of the Lord. One for the Father, two for the earth, three for the people. Swing like three in one. The holy pendulum of free posterity, breaking the monotony of poverty. That dropped down when I said pendulum, didn't it? Well, I just did it. Because pendulum has the same rhythm as a swing. Swing, swing, swing. Now, I'm conscious of what I write. I said one for the Father, two for the earth, three for the people. Because Jesus and the Spirit point us to the Father. The honor is to the Father, not to Jesus. So that's what I was after. That Jesus points to the Father, and Jesus points to the people who point to the Father, and what I'm doing is honoring the Father in the swing festival. Well, that's another example for me. My father taught me the Bible stories well. In two languages, and when I didn't do them well, he hit me on the head, not too badly, but enough to call my attention to the fact that maybe I could do better. I did almost all my studying along railroad tracks in Nebraska, herding cattle during the Depression. Cattle, we had one cow, we didn't have cattle, but we were rich because we had always a good cow, and I would make a tent out of cloth and then put water on it, and the wind would cool it, and that was my first air conditioning experience. And I would study the stories along the railroad track, and I would listen for the train to come. It was the only thing that broke the monotony, and I would watch the train to go, and I learned a whole lot about eschaton and other things that call, like, coming and going and present, coming and gone and here. All the tenses became strong for me as I stayed put along that railroad track. And here's a picture, and I know you can't see it, I'm just going to show you. There's a picture of a nice door, a poor door in a way, and five black children sitting before the door. And I thought, who sat before doors? And I remember when Absalom sat before the door and tried to beat his father to counsel and tried to be faster than David, you know, and tried to counsel and tried to be the jury and tried even to, I mean, he handed out chocolate ice cream when his father wasn't looking. This kid was at the gate. The jury was at the gate. Those gates had something going. So I look at them and I say, they're young and they're jury. They will vote. A jury of five sit at the gate of the big city. A verdict is being called for. Since days of old, juries have sat at their city gates and sent out their decrees. It is at the doors which shut in and shut out that trials are held and their verdicts are passed. Squatted before the door, they try the looks on the faces and test the temper of the city. The jurisdiction is theirs, and there is no higher court. They are supreme. I want to change the rhythm of this considerably and tell a story about how this song came into being. Several years ago, I had a rock festival at Easter time. I wanted to make it very dramatic, so Lois and I went out and found 1,000 rocks. Not big rocks, just little rocks. And we thought we'd give one to everyone, so we estimated 1,000 would come. Well, we had 800 rocks left over. But so 200 came and received rocks. And we had an Easter rock band. I gave each person in the band a rock, so we had a rock band. And we played rock music. We played a song called Little Rock. And I didn't want them to think I just liked rocks, so I brought wood and I brought potatoes. Potatoes are a nice gift on Easter evening. Rocks are too. It's amazing how people like to make associations and connections, and how important souvenirs can be for not only calling up memory, but remembering what you are experiencing. So they not only each got a rock, but they fought over the potatoes. Not really, but they each wanted one, and there weren't enough. I brought not enough. I mean, I decided not to bring enough to see how they would behave on Easter when there's not enough. Oh, that was an experience. And the wood. And the wood, they didn't know what to do with the wood, so I said, let's build a sparrow house. That really bothered them. They wanted to build a wren house, a robin house. I said, how about a sparrow house on Easter? Only one person would build a sparrow house. He was an older person. And he had to do with prisoners, and he built the sparrow house. It was not completed by him, but I took it home and hung it in the garage. And a year later then, I took the sparrow house to seminary in Columbus, Ohio, when I was teaching a creative ministry course, and there was some objection by some students. They did not want to build on the sparrow house. They preferred to read a little more, but it was a requirement, so they all did help build the sparrow house. And the sparrow house, well, really is a very important picture, because it is a picture of a sparrow that comes home and also belongs to our Heavenly Father, who cares if one falls. And it was not a lesser bird in scriptures, nor is it a lesser bird now, regardless of what it does. It turned into a song, and I want to sing that song. It's a song of stretching. The paradoxes, I learned later, that's what they were called. I thought it's when you were at your wit's end. I suppose it's about the same. A paradox is about as far as two things can be apart without leaving each other. It's when things are so far apart that the contrast is so great that either it's either it's together a comparison or they have nothing to do with each other. And so I wrote this song. And it has big and little pictures. And it has to do also with this Jesus, this historical Jesus, in my imagination, probably in yours too, through this song, maybe in different ways, of course. And the song goes like this. I like the word if. It's a very fine pivoting word. It suggests a connection. And the song goes like this. If Jesus wept for a city. Now, cities are very large. And I always wanted to go to Jerusalem. I still do. The only Jerusalem I ever visited was over our piano when I was a boy. It was Jesus weeping over the city. And in Nebraska, that picture made cities look big. It was the first city I can remember ever seeing was Jerusalem, and Jesus was weeping over it. So that picture came through. When I write, I just borrow off my whole history. I mean, I don't just go back the last 6 months. I used to neglect the younger years. They're very important to me. He can fall in a tear. Now, that is a very tiny thing. A city is a very big thing. A tear is a very tiny thing. If Jesus walked on a tempest, I'm in scripture again, and those tempests are very big. It was even recorded. He can quiet my fear. Now, my fear, when I have a fear, it never makes the news. You've never ever read when I get scared. You can read about the tempest in the Sea of Galilee, but you cannot. They never record my fear. Do they record your fears in your home newspaper? Mine neither. They're very tiny. I guess they're not newsworthy, but they're big enough for me to say it's that way. And if Jesus lay in a manger, that is a very historical place. I really am glad that he did that, because I'm very attracted to space. I mean, I go back to places, you know, go back to places, trees, water holes, and all kinds of railroad tracks. I go back. I'm very spatially oriented and very temporal. And if Jesus lay in a manger, he can stay neath a tree. I don't know. I chose tree. I chose tree because I liked trees when I was a boy. My father had me carry 2 buckets of water, one in each arm, regularly to keep the trees growing through those years. Because wherever he went, he planted the woods. And it became a woods. And so trees were very important. And it's a good word when you want to rhyme. A tree rhymes with glee, flea. Fleas never get sung in hymns. But it would rhyme. And if he has love for a sparrow. See, I've got that sparrow back. You don't forget in a stanza. You kind of go back and pick it up again. See? But, and now I'm really in another piece. See, the first line's always kind of in the scriptures. And if he has love for a sparrow, he can love you. And rhymes with the tree. What is it? Me. See, you very quick. You could have done that. At least that part of it for me. See, so that's kind of how I think. I don't get very fancy. I don't frighten myself. I used to be frightened and frighten myself a great deal. What it does for me is it turns off reflection, intimidates me, and turns down prayer. It makes praying less possible. It makes makes sensing very difficult. This way, you almost spend your time screening it out, not letting it in. It's flowing. That was the first stanza. Now there's only one more so far. There may be more. But the second one has the same ideas going, that is very large and very tiny, called paradoxes, or at the ends of things. Now, I've never been to Egypt either. I want someday to see a really, you know, honest-to-goodness desert. Someday I'm going to plan a tour so I get to see these things. I don't think I'll be disappointed. In the meantime, if Jesus walked on a desert. Now, in a desert, one thing you don't find is the next word that I'm going to sing about. He can come through a door. Now, doors are very important. All the houses I've ever lived in have many, or several doors. I mean, doors are very important. They're just kind of part of our architecture. But deserts don't have doors. No, I mean, not really. Marvin Anderson builds houses where I live, and he'd have a tough time just setting up doors in the deserts. So I think that would be very funny to walk through a desert and find a door. So I'm in two places. But I've been in a house that felt like a desert and that needed a door. And if Jesus went into heaven, I still point up. I'm still not used to pointing out or down or however heaven is. I was brought up in when geography said it was up. Jesus went into heaven. That always seemed easy to me also, because the pictures, the woodcuts, showed it easy. I was not surprised by escalators because I had watched the woodcuts. And the woodcuts of Jesus' ascension make escalators look tough. He can run in a war. Now those don't seem to go together. Ascending into heaven and running in a war, and in both. And if Jesus lay in a manger, that's called a refrain. You heard that one before, right? It's the same one that comes back. I'm going back to that one. He can stay 'neath a tree. It's a willow tree I'm talking about. I know where this one is. It's right outside Humboldt, Nebraska. And if he has love for a sparrow, he can love you and me. Now, I don't call that Bible study. I don't suppose it would hurt to call it that. To me, it's that there's a story that's true for me. It was recorded in scriptures, and I'm glad because it reminds me of what's true in me. Deserts and fear and tempests and doors and sparrows and me and all the things that between which I live, from which I borrow. The sparrow house was finished. I took it on North Central Airline many times. I would say to the stewardesses, if you can guess what's in this paper bag, you can have it. See? They never guessed. They apparently didn't think there would be a sparrow house in there. See, if they had said birdhouse, it would still have had to be sparrow house. You know, they have to be exact, because this was, and when the sparrow house was finally finished, it had a little cross on it. And they wanted to do that. That was up to them. And they painted it a blue, kind of a robin egg blue. I think they felt better to paint it at least a robin egg blue. And so that's it. That is another story. Now I want to play a little harmonica, because I want to accompany my next story. And that is another thing. I bought this harmonica and I played it 34 times. I only play it in public. And I've not played it in private yet, because I'm giving myself lessons. And I do this for several reasons. One is that I think if I took lessons, I might become so good I wouldn't do it in public anymore. And so I'm trying to stay, keep it in public. And then also it encourages beginners of other instruments. Across the country, people who are afraid of beginning are beginning. And they're bringing their guitars and things, and when they've only had two lessons, and that's enough. Those are hard times when you've had only three lessons. After 30, I would imagine it would be easier if you had a teacher, but I've not had a teacher. This is the goes up here. I know the high notes go to my right. I wrap it in a rainbow, and that's a long story which I won't tell, but it's just it's a promise. I feel I'm with people who probably wouldn't hurt me. We're the people of the rainbow. I feel pretty safe here doing this. There's a song that I played on this here, and I want to play it again. It's a song, There's a Bomb in Gilead. I will tell you, because often people don't recognize it. I think it's a healing song, and I want to talk about a healing story. There are healing stories in the scriptures, and the scriptures are still taking place. I mean, what Jesus did, he still does, and what this, and the power is not gone. Not long ago in this village, a girl came off the bus, and she said, "Do you know me?" Well, I didn't know if I knew her, and she said, "Do you have the green cloth?" I said, "Are you from Wisconsin?" She said, "Yes. Remember my mother gave you the bouquet?" And I said, "I certainly do know you." And this is just very quickly the story. It's a healing story. That's why I played this. I wanted to take this harmonica back because I wanted to accompany my readings. But I found out that you have to do it between your readings. You can't play at the same time. So I kept it. By that time I had used it once, so they wouldn't take it back anyway. She said, do you remember what happened? And I said to her whole group, the day that she left, I'd like to tell you a green story. And they said, well, where are you going? I said, I'm going over here in the green. So we went out here in the green and stood and had a green story. And that seemed a little strange to them. I didn't think they were that old. They were about 17. Average age was 17. I thought they still knew that you'd go to a green place to tell a green story. But apparently they aren't learning that in school. So I don't know where you learn that. There's no course maybe on that. I think it's just called free association. It's a free, maybe it's an extracurricular course that you get somewhere. So when we were on the green, I told them that when I had been in their parish, I asked the people that night to bring something off which they could talk. Before I could look up, there were 200 things in the middle of the floor. I panicked. I wondered if we would be there till midnight. So I decided what to do. What you do quickly in a time like that. I decided just to pick them up one at a time and quickly to ask, whose is this? So I did, and she said, it's mine. I said, what is it? She said, dry flowers from my son's funeral. He died 12 years ago. I'm new in the parish. You don't know. They didn't know. She wanted to tell them about the death of her son. And now they knew her story. And I said, whose is it? Because I didn't know. She said, that is your bouquet. So now I had bouquet in a plastic bag. And I looked, and what do you do then? Well, what you do is I don't say, well, now that's over, we'll go to something else. You never go to something else. You go to what's next, which is probably related to what you had going. Things are very relational. So I saw the green, and I picked it up, and I said, whose is this? And a woman said, it's mine. She told her a story, and I said, do these two belong together? The whole group said yes. So I took the bouquet of flowers and wrapped them in the green, and they belonged together. And when I left that place, it was a very exciting place to leave, because something else happened. They were very unhappy because they had moved the church. They had raised a church. Raising means they had just wiped it out. It was over 100 years old. And the reason they had wiped it out is that they thought that they had outgrown it and they were building another. But some of the people were very unhappy. So I asked for a shovel. And we went to, they followed me. And I said, show me where the altar was. And they showed me. And not many were there, just a few who were most unhappy. That's sometimes called the complainers. But that they had a right to complain. They were not in touch yet with what had happened. So I dug out a shovelful, and they felt it. And I said, that's been waiting for 100 years to be a garden. They got so excited, they all wanted some. So we got bags, and they filled their bags and took home and potted plants. See, so then they said, don't give us everything. Take some where you're going. I said, I'm going to the seminary. So I went to Columbus, Ohio, where I was teaching and commuting to that time. And I took some to a church history professor, and I said, if anyone there in the faculty would enjoy a little earth from under a church that had been standing on an altar space, you know, for 100 years, probably be this man. So I took him. It took him by surprise. It took him several weeks to kind of receive it. But he did. When we gave him a tree with it, and he planted a tree in this earth, he even named it. So he accepted it. Now this girl comes to Holden Village and says, do you remember my mother and me? Well, I went back a year later, and I didn't know who they were, but I took the cloth with me. And this woman comes and says, here I am, I see you have it. I said, sure. I mean, that's like taking along your notes. So I mean, these are my notes. So I just lay this out, and people say, oh, he remembers. He's telling stories. Yes, I do. I tell stories. I'm a great gossip. There's a study on in the church where the people tell stories. I'm past that study. They do tell stories. And wherever I go, people tell stories, and they know they've been telling stories. They didn't know that good gossip is what gospel is. But it doesn't take them very long to find that out, about 2 minutes. And so she said, I want to tell you more of the story. This was a year later. Now the girl is standing beside her. And she said, he picked those flowers and brought them home to me at supper time. And after supper, he walked out and he was struck by car. Those are hand-picked for his own funeral. And the little girl said, Mommy, I didn't know that. And now this girl says, do you remember me and my mother? And when she went to the bus, she put her arm around me and she said, that willow tree in Nebraska, how old was your brother? I said, he was 18 and I was 9. She said, I feel like we're very near each other. And she put her arm around me. She said, I feel like we have something in common. I said, what do you remember? She said, I remember that I was angry for 5 years. And I was 4 years old when my brother died. And I don't remember anything before the age of 7 except my brother's death and my anger. She said, I feel like we're very near each other. And she put her arm around me. She said, I feel like we have something in common. I said, what do you remember? She said, I remember that I was angry for 5 years. And I was 4 years old when my brother died. And I don't remember anything before the age of 7 except my brother's death and my anger. And she said, now, since my mother's green cloth, I have been remembering things from then that I thought I had forgotten. Not want to, the same song. It fits. You can hum along. You might even wonder how it fits. It's called There's a Balm in Gilead to heal the what? The wounded or the sin-sick soul. Falling apart. It's the only copy I have, and if I could find another copy in the United States, I'd buy it, but it isn't being printed anymore either. And this is also a true story. I will read it from this one. This is a sequel to that book. I read about this in Wisconsin. Well, this one I'll read on my way to Wisconsin. This one is in New York. This is another true story. This is a story that I find recorded in the scriptures too. It's called It Hurts. I was in the city and someone said to me, I haul garbage. I was inside the vehicle. And I said, oh, and I'd always wanted to be in a garbage truck. I wanted go on the route. So this was very exciting to hear this person say, I haul garbage. Oh, from morning till night. Well, I've always wanted to talk to one. And there isn't any part of the city I don't know. Oh, really? Well, name any place. Well, I'll take your word for it. I pick it up and I dump it. Well, I didn't have you pegged as a garbage man. Well, I know just where they are. You mean their addresses? I mean the people. You mean the people? I mean I can tell about them. Just ask me. You mean you can tell about them by the stuff they throw away? No, I can tell about them by the way they act. By the way they act? Yeah, by the way they pay me and how they do it. By the way they pay you? Yeah, but how they bribe me to take them there. You mean to the dump? I mean to where they drop them off and the places get to smell. They stink way out to the curb. They stink? And they plop down in the back and you can tell the stink and the perfume on them. Yeah, but you said I haul garbage. And sometimes it's so strong you think it was a brewery truck and you stop once or twice while they heave out of the door. If they don't make it, then you clean out the cab at the next hour. Oh, I thought you said you haul garbage. I've been driving out of this cab stand for 24 years. Sometimes I feel like I'm hauling garbage. Oh, so that's what you do. Yeah, I just dump them. That's what I do. Well, sir, this is where I get out. See you again. Thanks. Thanks. It's I would call that elaboration. It's maybe exaggeration, or is it meditation? It's where something happens and you reflect on it, and you surround it with the rest of its story, because you know the story. You know the story of this man. I want to read you another. This is a very good book. It isn't being printed anymore. I told you that I like these books. This was printed when Elmer Witt was in charge of printing some books. He was in charge of Walter Lee, and he's not in charge of that either. But this is a story of a child. Oh, it could be an older person. It's called Unscrew the Lid. Okay? A strange title. Most of the stories in the scriptures aren't titled, and they would probably be strange if they were titled too. But we title them. This is kind of a biblical title. It's bedtime, the best time, the worst time, bedtime, time to take down the tower, the Tinker Toy Tower, time to take apart the merry-go-round before it was done being put together and being whirled up and spun. It was a long day on the merry-go-round, a long day of expectation. Piece by piece it fell into place, and now it was night, and it fell apart for the sake of the hour for bedtime, and the hope of the merry-go-round all ended. The day ended, it was dark. Time to stop, time to clean up, time to tear down, time to clean up, time to tear apart, time to clean up, to bring to an end, time to clean up, to end what was not done, to put the project away in a box, to lay the blocks on a pile, and to shut the lid, to take down the beams, to unfold the engine, to topple the antenna towers, to crush the cement wall, to heap the blocks into a pile, a neat pile of blocks, to collapse the Colosseum, the plan bleachers, to stop, put it away, start over, over and over, to stop, bedtime, bedtime, time to go to bed, tear down, put away, clean up, go to bed, good night. Goodbye, tower, Tinker Toy Tower, just put together. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord the toys to keep. Good morning. Here we go again. Unscrew the lid. It won't unscrew anymore. Well, it's kind of like a parable. I want to... Jesus often pointed to events in order to get people conscious of time. Not long ago, an international convention of water scientists asked me to speak to them, and they said I had 25 minutes. Well, that was all right. I didn't think I deserved 25 minutes for an international science convention, and they asked me to read the Bible and to tell them what the Bible said about water, whether it helped people to be kind or not toward water. So I came to the convention with 78 pages and I had 25 minutes. I knew that I was in trouble, but I didn't know what to do. I was on a different time. I knew a lot of things to say, and I did not know how to bring it to them. So, but when I did come, they said, "You have 25 minutes." I thought that was the theme. You have 25 minutes. They kept telling me, "You have 25 minutes." So I figured that was the subject. But it wasn't the subject. So luckily I had brought along three movies of water. So I got the projector going. But I didn't know which film to run, because they all knew water. They were engineers and scientists from all over the world. So I said to them that I wouldn't put any film on, since they knew what water was looking like anyway. So I let it run. And then I had three records that had to do with water sounds, and I said to myself, and I really was going to play them in sequence, but I looked at the group and I realized that they knew more about water sounds than anything that I could move into, so I just didn't put any record on and let the record player run, and told them that I was sure they knew their own water sounds. And they didn't seem intimidated at all. They thought it a bit strange that I would run an empty reel. And then I told them that by that time I had about 22 minutes. And I didn't have a wristwatch, but I had a gourd. It was, I had given away my best gourd. My best gourd had kind of, it bent, and you could almost hold it like a wristwatch. But this gourd was more flat, and it didn't bend around my wrist. And I told them that I didn't have a wristwatch, but I had a gourd, and that I thought they'd understand that the gourd could tell me not exact time. There were many gourds in town. It was autumn or late summer, and that I knew it was late summer, but they were asking for 25 minutes, now 21 minutes, and I was looking at my gourd. And then I shook it, but it didn't rattle. I knew that if it rattled, it would be after Easter. I told him it would be spring if it rattled, and it didn't rattle. I squeezed it, it would rot, but it wasn't rotten either, so it was somewhere between winter and late summer. But they asked me for 25 minutes. So about that time, they began to understand that that we were into time, and one of them said, it's late. He didn't mean my 25 minutes. He meant, according to gourd time, for water people, it was late. He just said, it's late. And then a lot of people seemed to understand. Nevertheless, they shoved a gold watch to me, which showed that I now had 20 minutes left. So I turned on the metronome, and I set it at my age, 51, 52. It just ticked at 52. I don't know, how do you set a metronome? But it just kept... It was a... I wanted a water band or, you know, a symphony, something, but this... It just seemed to do it. And then I told him a story about a woman who was 81, and I set it at 81. What is time? Then I had an old calendar that had 13 sides to it. One side was an ad, the other 12 were the just the calendars. It was from 1967. And I rolled it to see what was up. And it was interesting. Every time I rolled it and said anything was up, they all knew something that had happened or that was significant in May or October, and they didn't mind. Then I had a towel that had the entire calendar of the whole year on it, and I had it on my arm, and they were very excited. It was the one thing in those 3 days that they said they somehow couldn't get out of their minds. And what they were conscious of was time. Time. And not long ago, I was looking at the side of a building with a little girl, and I said, "Oh, look!" I said, "Look. How old is it?" She started counting. I said, "Look!" Oh, she said, "This is a wristwatch. That's an alarm clock." And she was all over the wall. And her father came over, and she showed him time. Absolutely fascinated by the fact that by gourds you can tell time, by water you can tell time, by walls you can tell time. And I don't even think that she's going to ask for a wristwatch for Christmas. She's looking, and she's noticing big time, little time, too late, too early time. I want to read one on time, and then I'd like to have you comment if you want to. This is the time when I want to read. It's a picture of time. I'm coming to it. Here it is. Well, it's the railroad track. Remember I told you I used to walk the herd cows along the railroad track? You could walk on one of those. They're narrow. It's a piece of metal. And so if you can get on this walk with me, okay? And sound it with me. You can get steps in between, but we're going to try and get the rhythm together. They walked and walked over Jordan and through the walls of Jericho, the footbridge of Israel was safely suspended in a promise, and Pharaoh's daughter and Rahab the harlot stood at the ends of a walk 400 miles long. A hungry people had migrated with empty feed bags, and a nation returned to milk and honey. Goshen was past tense, and Pharaoh's daughter saved a baby bobbing in a wicker basket. Jericho was current event, and Rahab the harlot saved spies escaping down a rooftop rope. Courage re-entered the stammering camp, and the people were articulate in their walk, for their walk had a holy spirit. Their songs were loose, their march was full of cadence, confidence, their feet were free. The way over Jordan was like an iron road beneath the rhythmic walk and terrible trumpet tones. And stumbling stones were stepping stones, and children walked again where forefathers once had fled. It was a confident entry, and earth matched the step of their spirit, and the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. God's people go. Sense of history. It's a sense of history and going. We have 1 minute. Just tell me what this has meant. We have a minute. The people will be gathering from around the village. What's this night meant? Helps to say it.
See about a warm.
Quick.
I keep remembering your song from last year that Lois wrote, your little rock song.
Haven't sung it this year.
I'll sing it for you, and I can't sing. It's beautiful.
You really want to, don't you? Yeah. We will before that we leave tomorrow. What does this mean to you?
You've given us a plan for reflection if you ever, that is, if any one of us ever visits the Holy Land.
It's interesting. A plan for reflection. That's what Walter Capps was talking about, that we need some plan, some way for reflection. And we need to talk about, maybe in front of each other, how we do reflect and how we do review and renew and reform and reshape. And that is the work, surely, of the Holy Spirit, to reshape so that our life is dynamite. Dynamic, yes. All right. Thank you, and we'll see you in the village.